on this episode of Edge of the Web.
And as long as your arguments are cogent and you come across respectfully, right. and I tell you for, you know, firsthand and the many people I've taught how to do this, you can bring a lot of people to your side. See, when people are vitriolic and insulting, what they're not is influential.
Your weekly digital marketing trends with industry trend-setting guests. You're listening and watching Edge of the Web. Winners of Best Podcast from the Content Marketing Institute for 2017. Hear and see more at edgeofthewebradio.com. Now, alongside Tom Broadbeck, here's your host, Aaron Sparks.
Well, welcome back to you. Hey, we're broadcasting from Edge Media Studios, located in downtown Indianapolis, Indiana. Every week, we bring you the cutting edge marketing tactics, as well as interviewing marketing influencers from around the planet. So we're so blessed to be able to do this show and be able to bring you this content on a regular basis. The reason for the show, well, the show is actually sponsored by, we're powered by Site Strategics, your digital marketing pioneers, specializing in the agile digital marketing techniques and strategies. So if you want to learn more about what we do at our company, go over to sitestrategics.com. I'm your host, Aaron Sparks. I'm the founder and CEO of Site Strategics. The reason we do this show, if you haven't joined us before, and we certainly appreciate all our newcomers on a regular basis, if you haven't heard this show on podcast or seen it live, the reason we do this is we are constantly focusing on creating great content about digital marketing tactics, demystifying what's out there for you, the omni-channel digital marketer, as well as companies that are wanting to learn more about all of these areas of digital marketing techniques and tactics. It's challenging, and we certainly have been doing this for a number of years and have been able to unpack a huge amount of information. So you certainly want to go check it out over at edgeofthewebradio.com and see what we have and who we're talking to on a regular basis. It may very well be interesting for you. Hey, to my left, actually in the pilot seat over in the production booth, we've got Tom Broadbeck. He's the director of digital media. Sir, how are you doing?
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. Hey, this was a very special segment today, and it was really cool. So we actually wanted to drop the news and go straight to our interview with Bob, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for being on the show again, Tom. Yep. I want to introduce our guest to you. That is Bob Berg. Not Burge. Berg. Sorry about that, Bob. Author of The Go-Giver Influencer. How are you doing today, sir?
Good, and I've been called worse, so...
Oh, I'm sorry. They got to spell it to me phonetically sometime.
Usually it's spelled wrong. Usually it's spelled wrong, not even said wrong. So that was actually good. I like that.
Fantastic. Well, Bob's actually hailing from Jupiter, Florida, and a little bit rainy down there, but what a great place. You've been down there 30 years. What's it like down in Florida?
You know, I love it down here. I'm grateful every day. I would say I grew up in the north and got down here as fast as I could. I am totally a wimp. The weather suits my style. I love Indianapolis. I've spoken there plenty of times. Fantastic place. Mm-hmm. I'd just rather be there in the spring or the summer.
Oh, I understand that. Well, Bob, we came across this book, and we really wanted to open up our channel to you and unpack a lot of the key thoughts that you have here. I think it ties into a lot of concepts around social media and influencer marketing. And if you do the honors, I wanted to deep dive with you today. How about that?
Oh, absolutely. Let's do it.
All right. So
now it's time for Edge of the Web featured interview with Bob Berg, author of the book, The Go-Giver Influencer.
We even had the deep voice guy, Bob.
Yeah, I know. I like that. Yes. Yes.
Well, let me introduce you to our audience for those who have not read any Bob's stuff here. For years, Bob Berg has been known for his book, Endless Referrals, but for the past few years, his book, The Go-Giver, has captured the imagination of readers, selling over 700,000 copies since its release. The book has been also translated into 21 languages, which is incredible, and has been rated number 10 on Inc. Magazine's list of most motivational books ever written. Right there is some some accomplishment. There's it, and there it is on screen. The Go-Giver and the Go-Giver Influencer is what we're talking about today. His new book, The Go-Giver Influencer, tackles the paradox of achieving what you want by focusing on the other person's interests, resulting in both immediate and long-term successes. So there's the official story. What's your real backstory, Bob?
Well, the real backstory is that I began as a broadcaster many years ago. I started out in radio and sports, and then I was the late night news guy for a very, very small ABC affiliate in the Midwest. Was about the worst news anchor you've ever seen. I was 24 years old, had absolutely no idea of the news, didn't care about the news. And I think my performance reflected that very well. And I think I was probably, you know, I was probably too positive for the medium anyway, because my idea of a good newscast opening would have been something like, "Good evening, everyone. I'm Bob Berg in the news tonight. Everything's great." Go to bed. Let you know if something comes up. Well, it wasn't long before I wasn't in broadcasting anymore. I like to say I graduated into sales. The challenge was I knew nothing about sales. So I floundered for the first few months until I walked into a bookstore one day. This is almost 40 years ago, back when basically bookstores were more known for selling books than they were. And there was a sales section, and that surprised me. I didn't realize there were books about sales. I didn't know that was a thing. So I remember getting a couple of books. One was by Zig Ziglar and one was by Tom Hopkins. And I took those books home and I absolutely studied them every night after work. I practiced and drilled and rehearsed and highlighted and underlined and did everything. And within a few weeks, my sales began to go through the roof. And it kind of taught me a big lesson. And that is, you have a methodology, a way of doing something, a proven methodology, you can pretty much accomplish what you want to accomplish. To this day, I personally define a system as simply the process of predictably achieving a goal based on a logical and specific set of how-to principles. In other words, if it's been proven that by doing A, you'll get the desired results of B, then that's what you need to do. Keep doing A until you get the desired result of B. And it kind of happened that way. My sales career took off, became sales manager, started sharing, and as they say on Seinfeld, yada, yada, yada. I began speaking on the topic and writing books. And in the Go-Giver series is actually co-authored with John David Mann, who really is the lead writer and storyteller. He is I'm a how-to guy. He is a brilliant, brilliant wordsmith and storyteller. And he's the person who, because they're, most of them are parables, they're stories. And he's the one that really makes them come alive.
Oh, that's very laudable to make sure that you mention the co-author there, because, I mean, yeah, you come together, you converge talents, and everybody contributes into this recipe. The Go-Giver, as I understand it, it's turned into a kind of an anchor of inspirational books. I mean, with the sheer fact that it's Inc. Magazine's top 10, number 10 on the list of most motivational books ever written. So just tell me how that happened. That, I mean, you're talking about do A until you get B. Well, how was that a goal to actually get to one of the most influential books ever written? Was that one of the targets?
That's a great question. I don't think that itself was a target. We felt we had an idea whose time was ready, and that we thought it would be well received. But we've also put a lot of work into it. It's been 10 years since the first book came out. And, you know, I continue to do several interviews a day on the book. Well, right now I'm interviewing on the new one usually, but we've kept the momentum going. We've been very fortunate in that we've had a lot of influencers who have read the book, and they have talked about it to others, which goes exactly to what you're saying about influencer marketing. Yeah. And sometimes it's proactive and sometimes it's even reactive. You want to obviously make it as proactive as possible and create the environment where that's about to happen. So the relationships that I had been able to establish through being in the business and being around for a while helped it get off to a good start. Same with John on his end. Mm-hmm. And then what we've done is just kept that momentum going, doing a few things consistently over time.
To further that, we're talking about influencer marketing as a key factor. You had advocates championing that book. So you really did give something by the publishing of the book and what you've created. You gave something to them that they could get around, and it was part of their lexicon, part of their go-to reference material. As soon as you create a utility for individuals, something that is valuable for them, that they see and resonate and align from a brand standpoint, it's very easy to advocate, right?
Yeah, well, what you said is perfect. It shows that you do have to have a thing of value, okay? And value is always in the eyes of the beholder. We might think it's the best book ever written, but that doesn't mean anybody else does.
Right.
And without that, it doesn't matter how much work you put into it. You're gonna have limited success. You'll have some, because you can take something that's not even a good product. If you work at it hard enough, you'll get a little traction. It won't be sustainable, but you'll get some. By the same token, by and large, you can have a great product. And if you don't do the work to get it out there into the marketplace, the only way it's gonna take off by itself is almost by luck. I mean, there have been some stories of books where the author did no marketing and somehow somebody picked it up, the right person picked it up, and it kind of started a chain reaction. I don't know about you, I don't have the guts to back and hope something like that happens.
No, so most of us only have one or two shots to really be able to move it into the marketplace. You don't have a bandolier of books. I mean, you put a heck of a lot of focus in there, and you can't just wait for the ebbs and tides of the marketplace to pick it up and drift it over to somebody, right?
Right. That typically happens after you've done the work. That's the way life works. Again, not that there's not some luck involved, and it's happened before, but to depend on it, I think is pretty counterproductive.
Understood. So if you could unpack The Go-Giver, and forgive me, I have not read the book yet, in full transparency. I'm absolutely going to get a copy of that. But we do appreciate you sending up The Go-Giver Influencer for our consumption. I really appreciate that.
My pleasure.
No, you're more than welcome. Thank you so much. Can you unpack The Go-Giver concept to our audience real quick?
Yeah, it's actually very simple. It's just that shifting your focus, and this is the key, shifting your focus from getting to giving. And when we say giving in this context, we simply mean constantly and consistently providing value to others. Understanding that doing so is not just a nice way, not just a pleasant way of conducting business. It's the most financially profitable way as well. Not for any kind of, you know, woo-woo, particularly esoteric reasons. It's actually very logical. Because when you move your focus from yourself onto providing value to others, people feel good about you. People begin to know you. They like you. They trust you. They want to get to know you. They want to provide value to you. But it goes even deeper. And when I speak at sales conferences, and I speak at a lot of sales and leadership conferences, I'll often start by saying, nobody's going to buy from you because you have a quota to meet. And, you know, we all laugh because we all know that's true. No one's buying from us because we have a quota to meet. No one's going to buy from you because you need the money.
Right.
No one's going to buy from you because you're a really nice person who believes in what you do.
Right.
They're going to buy from you. They're going to do business with you only because they believe that they will be better off by doing so than by not doing so. And that's the only reason anyone should buy from you or from me or from anyone else. And what's great about this is it ensures that the entrepreneur, the information provider, the salesperson, what have you, has their focus in the right direction on that other person. And this is why, you know, John David Mann and I say that money is simply an echo of value.
There it is.
You know, it's the thunder, if you will, to value's lightning. And which means the value must come first, and the focus must be on bringing absolute immense value to that other person. And the money you receive is simply a very natural result of that value.
That's poetic, but it's also, it cuts to the truth of the matter is that if there's so much in marketing and in the industry of marketing that insists upon itself, it's not valued valued nearly as much as almost in the marketing environment. It's a perceived value. But when it gets down to it, unless there's a transactional element and a utility that you can provide, a value that somebody can take time and appreciate and then invest in, right? Then a lot of marketing can be very, very fruitless. I don't want to keep on coming back to marketing, but I'm using this as almost like a template or a filter over the marketing industry.
Right. And I think what we all as marketers need to understand, and I think we intuitively know this, but we don't always pay attention to it or keep it in our conscious awareness, is that value, which I define as the relative worth or desirability of a thing, of something to the end user or beholder. In other words, what is it about this thing, this product, service, concept, idea that brings so much worth or value to someone that they will willingly exchange their money for it or their time or their energy or their what have you.
Right.
But here's the thing, value is always in the eyes of the beholder. It's not what we believe is of value about it, and it's not what we believe they should believe is of value about it. It's about them. And we can, it's difficult sometimes to keep that in mind. I know myself, when I write a sales letter, before we send it out, my business partner, Kathy Tajanel, who's just absolutely brilliant, she and I will go through it, and we'll go through it line by line. And it's amazing for someone who teaches that it's all about focusing on the other person, how much that first draft of the sales letter seems to be about me. Right? And we have to go through it and go through it and go through it and keep saying
We're naturally wired that way. That's the problem.
Absolutely. We are self-interested individuals, and so is our prospective customer.
Well, you know, to that point, I want to practice what you're preaching and focus on the go-giver influencer. Let's bring around it to what we're wanting to do with you is to talk about the go-giver influencer. So tell us about the book and the inspiration about the book.
Sure. Well, again, it's a business parable, and the basic story is about two people. One is an entrepreneur who has developed a line of delicious and very healthy pet food, dog and cat. And the other person, his counterpart, Jillian Waters, she is the buyer for a very kind of stodgy pet supply company. They're a national chain. Because Jackson is in their town, they know about him, and they want to kind of get an edge in the competition and get an exclusive on his food. He doesn't want to give an exclusive because it's locally sourced, natural, and he knows that would take the quality away, so forth and so on. But basically, Jackson and Jillian each have exactly what the other person wants if they can just work through things. The problem is they're not working through things. What should be a business marriage made in heaven turns out to be anything but that. And every conversation they have at the beginning, they get further and further apart, and they just can't understand what is going on in this other person's head. And they both find a mentor. In this particular story, we've kind of changed it up a little bit. Now there are two mentors in this story and two proteges instead of the usual one. Interestingly enough, in the end, everything turns out all right.
Well, I mean, don't let us off a hook like that. I mean, there's certainly this is a story about finding common ground where there only appears to be irreconcilable conflict, right?
Yeah, and you know the interesting things. It's sort of a mirror image to what's happening in the world today and in our country. What we're going through in terms of communication, air quotes around the word communication.
Yeah,
because you see so many vitriolic and insulting arguments now, and not just online. You see it at family get-togethers, you see it at parties and in the office, but online, I mean, it's just
Terrible. It's terrible. The Kanye West thing that just happened. He reached across into another political party, and he said, hey, I can't remember, Colleen, anyway, he just referenced somebody saying, hey, I like the way you think. And it just happens to be the opposite of his political disposition, and there's a throng of people just really screaming for his head and her head. I mean, it's just untenable.
Yeah, and you know, you're absolutely right, and it's as though people are, and it's not that people are being protective of or loyal to their values. They're being loyal and protective of their team. Mm-hmm. And that's different. And what happens is there's a lot of people falling into that confirmation bias issue, where, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's not particularly fancy. It means anything you come across or hear, if it confirms your already held beliefs or biases, you believe it. If it doesn't, you ignore it. Well, you can't learn that way. And it's almost as though you're either on our side, or not only are you wrong, but you are absolutely evil.
Right.
And, you know, you might see an argument, and it might, you might see this on Twitter, might see this on Facebook, could see this on LinkedIn, where someone makes a statement. Let's go again. Let's go back to politics. They may make a political statement. Someone comes on and comments and says, "People like you are the worst excuse for human being. You're not even human. You want bad things for people. You're hoping to ruin this country."
Right.
You
know? Right. Right.
Now, does the person ever respond to that by going, "Thank you so much"? That way before, but now that you bring it up like that and have insulted everything I stand for, I'm changing my opinion. I'm on your side.
It's there's never that type of result. However, it's so easy to fall prey to those battlements, those edifices of just mudslinging, and that's putting it lightly. I mean, there are some terrible types of communications out there, and it just shows you that the space to actually give is kind of the narrow path, for lack of a better discussion. It's very easy to insult. It's very easy to encamp. It's very easy to never look at the other person's point of view, as well as what they're interested in. And what you're talking about is bridging that gap and finding that interest, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the person who can do that, they have influence. You know, they're able to move people. And, you know, here's the thing. Tact and kindness should never be confused with compromise, okay? Mm-hmm. We can always speak tactfully and respectfully to others, even those who totally disagree with us.
Amen.
And maintain our values and principles. The thing is, we're much likely to be persuasive when we speak to that person in a way that's kind, that's tactful. And even when that person still will not engage the correct way, as you know, online, and again, IRL, in real life, there are always people listening in who are kind of, their minds aren't totally made up yet.
Yep.
And so they're looking to see two things. One, who's making the most cogent points? That's the logical aspect. But even more importantly, who's more likable? Who can they relate to?
Right.
Who could they feel comfortable asking a question to and know that they're not going to get their heads bitten off? Right?
Yep.
And so we can. Let's take, for example, let's take that argument on Facebook we just talked about.
Sure. Right?
And the person says, "People like you are the worst excuse for human beings. You must want to ruin the blah, 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 blah." Okay,
right.
We answer back like this, okay? And there's a few different parts to it, but we'll give the response. Person's name is Dave, who made the scathing, horrible remarks. Dave, I must say, I greatly admire your passion for this topic. Like you, I want to live in a country where people are able to, and now you fill in the blank of what the arguments. I think our only disagreement is with what the best way to have that happen would be.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. So now what you've done is you've gone from an adversarial type of point of view to one of allies, two people looking for a common solution. Now, again, someone might say, "Well, wait a second, Bob, but that person's not going to just say, oh, yeah, right." Probably not, but that's okay. See, there are some people who are so far to one side or so far to the other side. Again,
Right. Don't
confuse them with the facts. Their mind's made up. You can do your best, but it's not going to happen.
No, it's more irritating than anything else at that point in time.
Right. But there are lots and lots of people who are watching and they're listening. And those are the people who, you know, like most people are somewhere in the middle, either in the middle or a little bit this way or a little bit that way. And as long as your arguments are cogent and you come across respectfully,
right.
and I tell you, for, you know, firsthand, and the many people I've taught how to do this, you can bring a lot of people to your side. See, when people are vitriolic and insulting, what they're not is influential. Hmm. They're not persuasive. The only people agreeing with them are the people who already did agree with them.
Right, right, right. It's an echo chamber at that point in time.
An echo chamber, exactly.
So why do you think, and I want to be respectful of time, but why do you think that it's such a rare jewel? I mean, it sounds so simple. How you lay that out is, if they're adversarial, find a common ground and then look at what the target is, what the goal is. Why do you think, I mean, with society and with our voyeuristic society now, and everything's in new media, and why do you think that that's such a disparity out there of that type of reasonable debate? Why is that not available? I mean, half a century ago, we respected debate to a particular degree. 100 years ago, you better believe. I mean, we were quite wired with. Granted, you know, you had some fiery rhetoric, but you still had a respectful nature. Why is it all gone now?
Yeah, back then, at least because, you know, politics is always, and different people have always been at odds and been brutal to each other in many ways. But it was not admired when you did those things. Mm. It was sort of really looked down upon. Now it's almost accepted.
Yeah.
And so why is that? Well, first, I mean, as human beings, we are emotional creatures. We like to think we're logical, but we're pretty emotion driven. We make major decisions based on emotion, and we back up those emotional decisions with logic, right? We rationalize, which simply means we tell ourselves rational lies to justify doing or saying what we wanted to do or wanted to say, even if we knew it wasn't really the right thing to say or do.
Right.
But also now, with the proliferation of social media, now pretty much everyone has a platform. And more than that, it's kind of a safe platform.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you insult someone, they can't exactly reach through the screen and punch you in the nose.
Right.
So it's very easy to be brave when, you know, that's the case. Society has also begun to embrace this more and more. And let's face it, what gets rewarded gets repeated. So when people act like this and they're not put down for it, but instead they're congratulated for it, well...
Yep.
What are they going to do? They're going to do it more. So
the people they influence and the people that are watching see that that's the new guideline. That's the new acceptance of society.
Exactly.
So it's these ripples that come from what the event is, and everybody's plugged in, everybody's consuming, and on top of it, we're no longer doing our own education for ourselves. We're letting the public discourse educate us, right?
Yeah, sometimes I feel like, you know, saying, I heard some things happen today. I think I'll go on Twitter to find out what I believe about it.
But that's what's happening.
Yeah, and exactly. And so that's why, and again, the person who will follow we call them in the story secrets, but there's nothing secret about them.
Mm-hmm.
And but the principles, if you will, can be much more influential because the playing field is a lot easier to be influential on these days because most people are simply doing it in a way that is wrong and counterproductive. So when you can utilize these principles, you're going to be the one who is influential.
You do mention in the book 5 secrets of genuine influence. Can you real quickly kind of run through those 5 secrets for us?
Well, the first one we alluded to, and that is master your emotions.
Amen.
That's where it begins. And that person who insulted you on Facebook, just hang on a second and breathe. Think about it first before you fire back an insult. Now, we're not saying deny your emotions. We're not saying forego your emotions. Emotions, by the way, are a beautiful part of life. They make life worth living. They bring us joy. No, just make sure you're the master of your emotions as opposed to your emotions being the master of you. Or as one of my great friends, the leadership expert, Dondi Scumaci, puts it, take your emotions along for the ride, but make sure you are driving the car. And that's the key.
That's
make
the
sure
key.
That you are in control of your emotions. The next is to step into the other person's shoes. And I know that sounds so trite. We've heard that before, but then you think about it, it's not so easy to step into the other person's shoes when you consider the fact that most of us have different size feet. Okay, what I mean by that is we come from different ways of seeing the world.
Absolutely.
Belief systems. What is a belief? It's a subjective truth. And practically every disagreement is a matter of two or three or more people seeing the same basic thing from different viewpoints. Okay? And so what we need to do is we need to step into their shoes through asking questions and then listening. Not listening just with your ears in order to hear, in order to form your argument to try to overcome them. No, it's listening with your eyes. It's listening with your body. It's listening with the back of your neck, as one of the mentors in the story says. In other words, with your entire being, you're listening to this person. And when you do that, you're able to listen in order to understand that person. It doesn't mean you have to agree with them, not at all, but you understand. Understand them a lot better, and they feel listened to, and they feel heard, and they're much more likely to be defensive toward you. The third one is set the proper frame, and this one is so very key. A frame is the foundation from which everything else evolves. I'll tell you the best example of a frame I've ever seen. It was about 3 years ago. I don't know how often I've told this story, but it's my favorite one. I was in a Dunkin' Donuts restaurant having coffee and reading, one of my favorite activities, right? And there was a little boy, about two and a half years old, a little toddler. He's running around the restaurant when all of a sudden his parents call him over to the table. He starts to walk over, and suddenly he takes a spill on the floor. He falls. Now, he didn't hurt himself, you could tell, but you could also tell he was shocked. He was startled. This had not happened to him before. And so the first thing he did is he looks at the two people in the world he trusts the most, his mom and dad, in order to get their interpretation of the event. What happened, happened. He wanted to know what happens now. And I truly believe that had his mom and dad gotten panicky or upset or, oh, no, yeah, are you? Right. He would have started to cry.
Yep.
But they handled it beautifully. They walked over quickly, but very calmly. They had smiles on their face. They began to, you know, applaud and, oh, what a great trick. That looks like so much fun. And, of course, the little boy began to laugh. What the parents did is they set a productive frame from which he could operate.
Absolutely.
And that's what we can do. Now, there's also times we have to reset an already negative frame with the person again on Facebook, who insulted us. Well, when we say, rather than buying into his frame of anger and insults, right? Instead, let's reset the frame and say, Dave, I must say I am very impressed with the passion you have for this topic. It sounds like you really care about, like you genuinely care about people. Like you, I want to live in a country where everyone is able to blah, 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 blah. I think the only difference is how we would go about having that. We've just reset that frame now. Okay?
Yep.
We reset that frame. He has the choice. He can buy into it. But everyone else now is playing in our frame as opposed to his.
Understood. And the last point?
Well, the fourth one is communicate with tact and empathy.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and my dad has always defined tact as the language of strength. And I so love that because he's my dad, but also because I think the definition really fits. It takes a strong person to think before they speak, to ask oneself how this is going to affect the other person. Tact is a way of communicating an idea that may not be particularly comfortable to a person, but this is the real world. This is how it is, and sometimes we need to do that. But it's doing so in such a way that the other person, rather than being defensive toward us and resistant to our ideas, they're able to be open to us and more accepting of our ideas.
It's removing the immediate triggers, the inflammatory remarks. And boy, that right there is such a... you don't see tact being utilized so often anymore. It's a lost art.
Well, I agree with you. And that's why that, and that, you know, this is, these are the reasons why John and I wrote this. I mean, we really felt it was time to, you know, bring this to the, not that we're anyone special, but to bring the idea to the world where people could hopefully start to embrace this. And the last one is to let go of having to be right. Ooh. Now this is, yeah. Now here's the thing. In all of our books in the Go-Giver series, we typically have five, you know, laws, principles, secrets, what have you. Mm-hmm. Four are kind of headed in the same direction, and the fifth one goes the opposite direction. It sounds counter to everything until you go into it a little deeper and you realize it's more that which brings it all together. We call it the four fingers and a thumb, okay? And let go of having to be right does not mean you don't care about being right. It doesn't mean you're not going to do your best to be right, to prepare to be right. No, none of that. It means you've let go of the attachment to having to be right. And this does two things. See, it sounds like that would make you less influential. Mm-hmm. Just the opposite. It makes you more influential for two reasons. One, when you let go of having to be right, you go into learner's mode, right? When you are just not, it's, you know, it's that boss, it's that person, it's that spouse, it's that friend, it's that person who just will not, no matter what, again, they can't tell them anything. They believe what they believe. They're right. You're wrong. That's it. They can't learn anything that way. When we let go of having to be right, we can learn. So it gives us more knowledge and it provides us with more strength. The other thing, the second reason, is that when we're engaged with someone and they can tell that our goal is not just to be right at all costs. It's not to make them wrong. It's not to overcome them.
Right.
But to seek a truth that is beneficial to all. Now they begin to act in kind, and they're much more likely to lose their defensiveness toward you and be more willing to embrace your idea.
That right there as immediately reactive as that should be the most important place to be able to get to, because that is the space in which all manners and all communication and lack of tact and all of the different inflammatory remarks come from, is right. If that attachment is so, yeah. and on a lot of it is also there's a level of insecurity because of that attachment, is that if people are not able to have compromise or have even an understanding of concession in their mind, that there's just no place where they're ever going to even listen to the opposing argument, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, it's so interesting because I will tell people, if you're a, and again, going back to politics, if you're a conservative, watch, just every so often, watch MSNBC.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a progressive, watch Fox.
Absolutely.
Now, don't watch it to insult them or to see where they're wrong or to see where they're right. That's not it either. Just watch it to understand where they're coming from. Watch it to see why they think what they think. Watch it to see if there's something within what they say, even if you don't agree with all of it, that you agree with some of it. Watch how they become more human to you.
Yeah.
Watch how you see where their intent really isn't bad, like you think. It's just a different way of going about accomplishing many of the same things that you'd like.
And there is a thing right there. If you don't go into learner's mind, then you're going to fabricate this fiction of the other side. And right. that's where the gap, the chasm really is created, right?
Yes. Yeah, very well said. Exactly.
Wow. Well, your book actually says, you say in the book that there's one motivating factor shared by every single person on Earth. What is it?
I learned this from a man by the name of Harry Brown, Browne, a guy who I really consider a mentor, and he was just a brilliant guy and just one of the nicest human beings. Harry also had a superb understanding of and respect for human nature. He didn't try to change it. He worked effectively within it. And what Harry said, and it was, you know, in all other ways, we are, as individuals, we're different, but we all, as human beings, we all seek happiness, OK? Okay. Now, happiness as defined as the mental feeling of well-being. Mm-hmm. As human beings, we're programmed for that. We seek happiness. Now, there's two other points about that, though. Number two is, number one, everyone seeks happiness. Number two, happiness is relative. Remember, we were talking earlier about value being in the eyes of the beholder.
Yep.
We all experience happiness differently as individuals. We place different values on different things. What brings one person happiness might make another person totally miserable or be totally meaningless. And number three, resources are limited, not to be confused with a lack mentality. We live in a very abundant universe. However, individually, we all have limitations in terms of time, money, energy, knowledge, wisdom, what have you. So we must constantly make choices. All day, every day, we as human beings and the person you are trying to influence is making choices, typically unconsciously, sometimes consciously. And every choice they make will be a matter of, do they believe that doing or not doing a certain thing will bring them closer to happiness as they understand happiness and based on the choices they believe they have. And once we understand that, we never have to live in a fantasy world. We understand that when we want to influence others, we must tap in genuinely into their needs, their wants, their desires, their goals, solving their problems, making them hat right,
yeah.
Or else they're not going to go that way.
So, to wrap up, it is so well said. That's the true nature of giving, is to be able to understand what that other person needs. If you're in an argument, or if you're on a team, if you're working with others, understanding what they need has to be the core principle of how you can affect influence.
Absolutely.
That's such an archetype of understanding right there, Bob. I appreciate you being able to pull that together. I certainly hope that we can disseminate this and move this this concept further and further, because the world needs this truth. It really does. And I understand now why the Go Giver concept is one of the top 10 most inspirational book. No, you're more than welcome. Hey, is there anything that we can promote for you on today's show before we take off?
I would say just people going, if they're interested, to The Go Giver without the hyphen, thegogiver.com.
Mm-hmm.
And if they'd like to, they can click on the purple cover, the one you have in front there, and yep. That will take them to a page where they can actually get the first two chapters if they'd like to see where the story's heading. And if they like it, they can click through to their online bookstore or wherever.
That is great. We have it on screen as well, thegogiver.com. It's a must read. And how long has this book been out?
It's been out 2 weeks now.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. We certainly want to let our audience know how to find you. Bob, you're a wealth of information, and we'd love to talk more in the future with you as things transpire. We wish you all the best in the world, but here's where our audience can find you: on the Twitter handle, Bob Berg, Facebook, Berg Bob, LinkedIn, Bob Berg, and Instagram, Real Bob Berg. All that we'll put in the show notes as well. Could I ask you to give a word of wisdom to our audience, especially our digital marketing audience, and potentially even the millennial audience in particular? You're bringing some truth that needs to resurface into today's marketplace and in today's new media. Can you give some guidance, a word of wisdom or two?
I remember about 2 years after I began selling, and I was doing pretty well, though I wasn't doing anywhere near my potential, sort of like Joe in the first Go Giver book, The Protégé. And I remember coming back from a sales appointment that did not turn into a sale. And I probably had kind of a miserable look on my face, because one of the guys there, he was an older guy about to retire. And I say older guy, he was probably my age now, mm-hmm. but back then he was this, older guy. And he said to me, Can I give you some advice? I said, yeah. And he wasn't in the sales department. He was in another department. And I said, yeah, absolutely. And he said, if you want to make a lot of money in business, actually he said, if you want to make a lot of money in sales, he said, don't have making money as your target. your target, he said, is serving others. Mm. Now, when you hit the target, he continued, you'll get a reward. And that reward will come in the form of money, and you can do with that money whatever you choose. But never forget, the money is simply the reward for hitting the target. It's not the target itself. Your target is serving others. And that made a huge difference for me.
I'd ask you to drop the mic, but I see it's on a boom there. That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Bob. I appreciate your time today. I truly do.
Thank you for having me.
You're more than welcome. If we can do anything for you, we certainly will. And thanks for the copies of the book. We appreciate that as well. All right. Thanks for listening to Edge of the Web, and special thank you to our colleagues at Site Strategics and our guest, Bob Berg, especially. Make sure to see all the must-see videos and much more of the insider information over at edgeofthewebradio.com. That's edgeofthewebradio.com. We'll talk to you coming up this Thursday. Who are we talking to, Tom?
Agvila DeFazio. We're going to talk social advertising.
Fantastic. All right. So for all of us here at Site Strategics and Edge of the Web, do not be a piece of cyber driftwood. We'll talk to you real soon. Bye-bye.